Welcome to the 81st episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney and I'm your host. Welcome. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida, and it's very humid here. So even my German Shepherds that run with me are suffering with the heat. We do a couple laps in the morning. Each one of the dogs go with me. I've tried to do both of them at the same time, but that's caused a few injury, mainly for me. So we go one lap each, and on the weekends we go longer, and they're not enjoying their long runs on the weekend. But I think maybe this weekend they'll get to do a shorter run, and I'll have to finish along by myself, probably listening to a podcast, but not my own podcast, that's for sure. I don't really like to hear my voice that much, and I'm happy that you're tuning in to listen, though. So over the last week, I've done a couple lectures. The first one was in Lee County in Fort Myers called the Taste of Lee. It's a tropical fruit expo. There were tropical fruits to taste, mangoes, jackfruit, custard fruits. You could look at some of that weren't ripe, lychees that were available to taste. They even had an avocado bread for sample. I bought some jicama seeds and loofah seeds. I learned this weekend that loofah, you know, the kind of loofah that you exfoliate with, actually grows on a vine. And so I bought the seed, and they're supposed to grow prolific in this area, so I'm trying them out. I also bought a turmeric plant and a ginger plant that I've set out. So I'm anxious to have those. I use a lot of turmeric and ginger in my cooking, so it would be nice to have my own. And while I was there, there was another lecture by a gardener that has over 500 plants and on her property, and she lectured about all the different tropical fruits and different plants and vegetables that you could, which would grow in Florida both this time of year and other times of year. So it was very, very interesting. And that's where I learned about the loofah. And then I gave a lecture on whole food plant-based nutrition. And I think there were probably two plant-based people there. The rest were curious about what I was going to talk about. It was kind of funny. A lady came in and said, I heard there was some sort of doctor talking about nutrition and plants. And of course, I said, that would be me. But by the time it was over, we had a full house, and it seemed to be well received, and there were a lot of interesting questions, and people were very happy to hear information on how they could help themselves get off their medications, and showed some interest. So that was great. I really do enjoy lecturing to people that are new to plant-based nutrition, because it can be such an eye-opening thing to hear about it for the first time. So we gave references, and hopefully people will look some of the reference up and maybe even come and do a nutrition class with me. The other lecture that I gave was the Venice Whole Food Plant-Based Lifestyle Meetup Group in Venice, Florida, which is just a little bit north. So I went a little bit south, a little bit north. And that group was almost all plant-based. And they also enjoyed hearing the lecture. I think, you know, again, if you're plant-based and listening to this podcast, you always like to maybe hear a few new tidbits and maybe get reinforced some of the tidbits that you knew before. So they enjoyed it. The funniest thing on that lecture was there was a lady that came in. It was at a holistic health center. And there was a lady came in that she thought that there was going to be an exercise class. And she decided to stay. And she wasn't plant-based, and she came up to me after the lecture and said it was, you know, she really, really enjoyed it. She learned a lot, and that she wished her daughter would have heard it, and maybe that, you know, her daughter and she might be interested in the nutrition class, and, you know, she was very, very excited. So it's, you know, it's, again, it's always fun to meet people of like mind that are plant-based, but it's also very fun to meet people that are just learning, kind of like a sponge ready to soak up some new information. So that was all good and a very fun weekend. I'm actually going back down to the Taste of Lee group and speak to their members directly this week. So that'll be interesting as well. Maybe I'll come away with some fruit. I don't know. And speaking of fruit, it is mango season in South Florida. It's my favorite fruit since moving to Florida. and they're mango trees with fruit hanging on them everywhere. So it's really exciting to drive down the road and see mango, big mango trees hanging on the trees. There's even a place where we ride our bike past a house that this little tiny tree has so many mangoes on it that they have card tables with boxes holding the mangoes up. So that's very cool. I have a few mango trees in my yard. They're just babies. There are no mangoes on them yet. So I've been lucky enough to snag some mangoes from other trees and then, you know, get some locally. So it's, I've been eating a mango for breakfast and maybe a mango at lunch and, you know, with my other foods, of course. But they're just really, really good at this time of year. And it's so cool to get fruits that are native to where you're living. In my office this week, I had a new experience. I found a side effect to whole food plant-based nutrition. That side effect is that a patient's spouse also went plant-based after we discussed it, and she got off her insulin as well as he got off his blood pressure pills, and his diabetes actually is without need for medication now. So, you know, that's always exciting that the side effect is that your whole family gets better. I've seen that side effects on several occasions now. It makes everybody happy. And certainly if, you know, the house may have been divided and then everybody gets well, it's, you know, that big, it's almost exponential as far as the benefits, because They're both excited about getting better, and they're both telling their friends and spreading the word. So it's all good. You know, no success is without somewhat of a failure. I also had a patient come in, and their cholesterol went up, and they said they were on the plant-based nutrition diet. But it turns out that they've been having a cheese pizza, and they weren't quite plant-based when you talk about fish and chicken and everything else. So again, perception's very, you know, an interesting thing. If you look at studies done and people reporting what they eat, they're wrong about 20% of the time, at least. And that's why a lot of these nutritional studies are very difficult to make heads or tails of, because people just don't remember what they ate. And they remember the good meals and they don't remember the bad meals. I've had, you know, a patient today that was gaining weight despite trying to eat better. And she's doing better at home, but she eats out a significant amount. And when she eats out, she has a lot of butter and a lot of salt. So her blood pressure was up. And, you know, so it's hard to, you know, go off the wagon terribly and then on the wagon. It's hard to make a lot of progress that way. But it is, you know, an evolution. And this particular person, I think, is going to take the nutrition class. And when she gets a little bit more support, I'm hoping that she'll be able to make more good choices when she goes out to dinner, because that's part of her social network is going out to eat. So I want her to be able to go out, but I also want her to want to choose healthy options as opposed to very unhealthy options. I want to, put a shout out to Tim Kaufman. He has the website fatmanrants.com, but he posted a very interesting, I would guess, nutrition hack that if you're working in an office and you have a desk and you're worried about afternoon snacking, that putting a potato or putting a couple potatoes in your desk drawer, and if you have access to a microwave, you could always nuke those potatoes in the afternoon to have as a snack as opposed to going for the potato chips or other bad things that you might get into. I thought that was a really good idea, because a potato will keep in your desk drawer for quite some time. And the worst scenario is that you'll have a potato that's sprouting that you could probably plant. The other thing that I kind of took and then ran with that is that, you know, beets. Beets are wonderful as far as for your blood pressure. They increase your oxygen consumption. We talked about that last time. And that's something you can also, you know, put in the microwave quickly at lunch. So I've done that here lately. I just throw a beet and I wrap it up in a dishcloth and microwave it for about a couple minutes, and it gets soft, and I slice that up on my salad at lunchtime. So I add my beet in very quickly. And it's a fresh beet. And of course, if you have the opportunity to buy fresh beets, then always buy the fresh beets with the tops on them, because again, the nutrients are really concentrated in beet tops, and they're very, very delicious. We make the beet tops with a little bit of garlic, a little bit of pepper, and maybe a little bit of balsamic vinegar to serve, if you like that or if you don't. But they're really, really good, and there's never any beet tops left when we cook them. And they don't have to be stellar beautiful. They can be a little wilty, you know, hanging off the beet. They still cook up and still taste really, really good. And as far as that goes, you know, Dr. Greger posted a video as far as the pesticides on your vegetables. And, you know, most of the time you can wash them off. Water gets a whole lot of them, some chemicals off. But you can remove almost all the pesticides from the outside of your vegetables with sodium chloride or, you know, a little salt water. So it's like one part salt and five parts water, and then rinse your vegetables and then rinse them again in water really good. And that'll remove the pesticides. So, you know, you don't necessarily have to worry about getting organic when you can't or being able to do something like that quick nuke routine at lunchtime. In my garden this week, we had our first crop of okra harvested. So we had a dish that we really like with okra, yellow squash, onions, tomatoes, and over rice. That's a really good dish. A little bit of hot pepper seasoning. And another dish that we have that we really like is kind of a casserole with green beans, potatoes, onions, and squash and mushrooms. And we serve that over rice as well. So those are a couple of dinners that I had this week. One of the things that it's not plant-based nutrition, but things that, you know, we assume that if you have a blockage in your arteries and we do angioplasty or stent placement, that everything's going to be okay. And in reality, that's only fixing that particular blockage. It doesn't fix your whole vasculature. So if you have blockage in one location that's 70 or 99%, then there are blockages other places. They may not be to that degree, but there are blockages all throughout your blood vessel system. So, you know, the stent may take care of symptoms that you're having from that particular blockage, such as chest pain or angina, but it's not going to do anything for the rest of your blood vessels. And in reality, if you're not having an acute myocardial infarction, meaning that that blood vessel is not completely blocked, it's really not going to decrease your mortality level. It will get rid of your chest pain that you're having with exertion, but if you're not having any chest pain and you just have a positive stress test, it's not going to do anything to prolong your life, and it certainly can't get rid of pain that you don't have. This week in the American College of Cardiology, they also noted a study that if you have a drug-eluting stent, one of the deadliest things that can happen is an acute blockage of that stent. When you get a stent, you have to be on very potent blood thinners such as Plavix. And sometimes people will be off the Plavix for another procedure or if they had bleeding. And you can get an abrupt closure of that stent without being on the blood thinner. And that is associated with a very, very high mortality rate. So if you think about it, if you had a stent placed and you weren't having symptoms, but then you had a side effect to the blood thinner that you needed to keep the stent open, and you went off of the blood thinner, you have a really good chance of having a clot in the stent and potentially dying from it. So you had a condition that was not life-threatening, all of a sudden became life-threatening. So when you compare that to changing your diet and stabilizing these plaques and making them less risky, again, it's you know, much more beneficial, much less side effects to changing your diet than it is to have this happen to you. The other thing that they reported on was that diabetics who have an acute myocardial infarction have a 50% chance greater of dying from that heart attack than people that aren't diabetics. And again, when we look at the population, the incidence of adult diabetes is increasing ever so rapidly. So again, with a whole food plant-based diet, you can decrease the incidence of diabetes and decrease the incidence of coronary artery disease and decrease your risk of dying of an acute event. So, you know, again, it just gives credence to this whole food plant-based diet. During the question and answer session of my talk the other night, I was asked what supplements I take, and I take a B12 sublingual chewable, 1,000 micrograms, about 3 times a week. And I encourage people that are on a whole food plant-based diet or even not on a plant-based diet to get a B12 level. And if it's on the low side, then certainly you'll need supplementation and that to be repeated. If it's high, you know, and you're just switching to a whole food plant-based diet, then I'd wait 3 to 6 months and have it checked again just to make sure you're maintaining it. But to be safe, usually 3 times a week is not going to make your B12 level too high and usually keeps it from being too low. But again, I encourage everybody to get the blood test. The other thing that always comes up is vitamin D, because vitamin D is very much in the news, and you know, there's a lot of claims whether low vitamin D levels are associated with diabetes, cancer, hypertension, and really the studies have not proven that it is. It's more probably of a marker of disease, that people that are sick tend to have low vitamin D levels. Vitamin D is more of a hormone than a vitamin. It's made by your skin. Once you're exposed to sunlight, is the best way to get it. But in studies that looked at, you know, decreasing the incidence of diabetes, cancer, and high blood pressure, supplementing with vitamin D did not work. However, there was a meta-analysis, which means they took up to 56 different studies with 95,000 patients and followed those patients for an average. They were followed for an average about 4 years, taking a plant source of vitamin D3, and those people were noted to have an increased life expectancy. So basically, if 150 people were treated for 5 years, one life was saved. The reality of that translated is that basically you can increase your lifespan by 2 years by taking a vitamin D3 supplement. It was lowest in African Americans, and highest in European women as far as increasing the life expectancy. So again, I would recommend getting a vitamin D level checked. And if your vitamin D level is on the low side, I would take a supplement. There's sublingual sprays that are vitamin D3. There's some oral supplements as well that are plant sources. They're better absorbed. And take your vitamin D. I'm very much convinced that eating a whole food plant-based diet will reverse cardiovascular disease. It will allow people to get off their blood pressure medicines. It will allow people to get off their diabetic medications. It will improve angina. I've seen it in my office now over and over again. It's a great way to lose weight without having to count calories. I'm convinced of it. But what about cancer? And certainly I'm a cardiologist, so I only know what I read as far as the prevention and treatment of cancer. But, you know, the facts are that tumors start to grow just like arteries start to close up at about age 20. And it takes billions of cells before a tumor is actually manifests itself. And there are hundreds of genes that need to be altered to get a cancer cell to kind of start to pop up and to propagate. And our chemotherapies are very much targeted at specific agents and not targeted at multiple etiologies and the multiple things that go wrong that lead to cancer growth and production. But one thing that's been shown over and over is that the curcumin, which is one of the big ingredients of turmeric, and it's what causes it to be yellow, that will decrease the incidence of tumors. And when they looked at people from India, where they use a lot of turmeric, they noticed they had a 23 times decrease in prostate cancer. They have a 14 times less melanoma. They had 10 times less colon cancer and 5 times less breast cancer. And, you know, it could be due to multiple etiologies. They certainly eat a predominantly vegetarian diet, but they use a lot of spices like curcumin that have a lot of anti-cancer benefits. So, you know, that's a really simple spice to add to your food. Turmeric, you actually increase the absorption by using pepper and turmeric together. It's great to make a tofu scramble. Certainly curries are great with it. So I would encourage you to experiment with some recipes using turmeric. They do make a curcumin capsule, and people have asked me about, they sell them for anti-inflammatory or pain as a pain pill type of thing. There are so many things in turmeric that can go along besides their curcumin. So I think that you get a lot more benefits by taking the turmeric. Certainly there are benefits from the curcumin. So one way or the other, but I think, go ahead and use the turmeric and you get the best of all worlds. The other thing that people in India eat a lot of are beans. And anybody that's listened to Dr. Joel Fuhrman, it's the second letter in his G-bombs, eating a lot of beans. Beans are an excellent source of fiber. They actually feed our good microbes, but they are an extremely good source of phytates. And phytates are, again, very prevalent in beans, grains, and nuts, and seeds. And this has been associated with increased levels of phytates. There's been a decrease in diabetes, in dental caries, in cancers, and in coronary artery disease. But one of the best things that the phytates are good for is its anti-cancer properties. And phytates in beans are very quickly absorbed, and they're absorbed by the cancer cells, and they decrease the growth of the cancer cells. They also decrease the blood vessel growth of the cancer cells. They decrease blood vessel growth that are starting to grow, and they also will stop blood vessel growth that's already there. They've been shown to work well on leukemia cells, colon cells, breast cancer cells, cervical cells, prostate cancer cells, pancreatic cancer cells, and melanoma cells. So, that's in what we call in vitro, which is in a test tube, but they've also shown these decreasing growth of these tumors in people as well. And there's multiple pathways that the phytates work, which makes it great for cancers because they have an antioxidant effect, they have anti-inflammatory effects, they increase your immune function. They will actually take a cancer cell and turn it back into a normal cell. They will cause destruction of cancer cells. They increase the body's natural killer cells' effectiveness. So there are just multiple ways that they help to decrease the incidence of cancers. That being said, how would you eat beans? One of the easiest ways is to put beans on your salad. So chickpeas on your salad, black beans on your salad are a good, great way. I like sprouted mung beans. I've been doing that. If you put mung beans in a jar with water overnight, rinse the water off and put them in a container that has a screen over top or a little sprouting container, by the next day you have mung beans to put on your salad. I like the chickpeas made into hummus, as well as white beans made into hummus. I really like the sprouted hummus. So you take chickpeas, soak them overnight. Again, let them sprout for a couple days so they get little tails on them. Then you can either cook them or eat them that way. If you take white beans plus cashews and lemon juice, you can make a creamy ranch-type dressing. It can be made into a Caesar-type dressing if you add some nutritional yeast. There's bean chili, so we use multiple different kinds of beans to make a chili. It's good to put beans on a potato or the chili from the beans on the potato, like a baked potato. I've seen people put it on a sweet potato. I have not done that at this point. I saw a recipe this week for black bean chocolate pudding that used cocoa, maple syrup, and vanilla and black beans to make a chocolate pudding. Black bean burgers or any kind of bean burgers, using beans to make a bean loaf or a meatloaf. Dr. Esselstyn's wife in her Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease cookbook has a wonderful eat loaf that the basis of it, some white beans with a bunch of other vegetables. Probably once a week or every other week we have bean burritos, so pinto beans or black beans we use in our burritos. You can make black bean brownies. You can make white bean blonde brownies. say that 6 or 7 times fast. We make cabbage rolls with beans instead of hamburger. We certainly make bean soup, either black bean soup or Cajun-type bean soup. You can put beans in your smoothie, the 300-pound vegan, if you want to check David Carter's website out. It's an excellent source, but he is a football player and a giant muscle man, so to speak. He played defensive line, so he's a big fellow that has to move a lot of people out of the road. And to maintain 300 pounds, he puts beans in his smoothies. So white beans in your smoothies work. If you want to bulk up, you can put beans in your smoothies. And you know, it's another way if someone you know has cancer or is trying to recover from an illness. Again, these phytates in the beans have so many beneficial effects. I would put white beans in their smoothie. You know, people are worried about taking Ensure or whey protein. You know, this is a much better source if you think about it. There is nothing in whey protein that's going to be beneficial to you except cause cancer from some stimulating insulin-like growth hormone. However, if you put white beans in your smoothie, you have such a boost in the nutritional value. Now, if you're trying to lose weight, I don't know that I would, you know, necessarily add beans to the smoothie and then just eat, you know, it may be more calories than you want. So save your beans for eating them directly so that, you get more full. But again, if you're trying to gain weight, then beans in the smoothie would be a great way. 4th of July is coming up, so baked beans is always another way to go. So if you have a very interesting bean recipe, then of course there's 3 bean salad. I forgot that one. But if you have an interesting thing that you do with beans, drop me a line on my email address at jamiedelaney.com or jamiedelaney@gmail.com. And I'd love to hear about that, and I could post it on the show notes. Speaking about eating, again, it's 4th of July. You know, in the old days, it used to be, a lot of people do barbecues on the 4th of July, not in the old days, but they still do. We'll probably be doing some seitan riblets on the grill, corn on the cob on the grill, some sort of salad. We'll do some sort of beans. Whether they're a homemade baked bean version or something along those lines. And, you know, what 4th of July picnic would be without a watermelon, so a fruit salad. And, you know, there'll probably be a pie this weekend, I would guess. So it could be a mango pie since I have a lot of mangoes and possibly a kale cake because I'm a little bit hungry for cake. So that was probably going to be on my holiday weekend menu along the way some way. I'm also going to have some Indian food this weekend just because of the beans and curry. And so I've been sprouting some chickpeas, so I'm ready to go on that front. Going plant-based is a journey, and we all have a different path and maybe cut out different things at different times. And, you know, sometimes fish is the last to go. Sometimes cheese or dairy is the last to go. I really do think that you see the biggest benefit if you can get rid of dairy first. And I also think it's very hard to wean yourself off of dairy, especially cheese. I think, you know, not too awful much like smoking, you just need to kind of get rid of it. So when you make the choice that you're going to get rid of dairy and just kind of make the leap. And once you've done that and possibly use, you know, the nutritional yeast, I think you get along just fine. But when I became plant-based, I didn't initially give up the oils. And it's not like I used a tremendous amount of oils, but it was certainly in the food process. And I suffered from reflux symptoms, and I would take proton pump inhibitors and actually took them for years. And kind of just passed it off that my mother had reflux disease, and I tended to get more of it when I was working than when I wasn't working, so I attributed a little bit to the stress of my job, and because it seemed like I didn't have as much reflux on the weekend as I did during the week, and just kind of checked it up as something I would have to probably take because I didn't want the consequences of long-standing reflux, which can be a change actually in the esophagus and stomach and can lead to cancer, which is, starts out as Barrett's esophagitis and then can become esophageal cancer. Or you can get strictures in your esophagus and everything else. So I really didn't want that. But I also didn't want to be on the proton pump inhibitors. But when I would try to go off, I would get pretty significant, heartburn type symptoms. And, I would often laugh that if I wasn't a cardiologist and knew the difference between heartburn and symptoms and angina symptoms, sometimes it would get bad enough that I would think that, I'm having the big one and kind of, laugh it off. But nevertheless, it was uncomfortable. So when I finally saw Forks Over Knives and started, really changing, in the office, I decided to give up eating oil myself. And when I gave up cooking oils, my reflux markedly improved. Actually allowed me to go off the proton pump inhibitors. I had to wean myself off, but I was able to go off the proton pump inhibitors. And it was actually quite remarkable. And once I did that, I never had reflux again to any degree. There's occasion, I'll maybe get into something that has some oil in it and I'll get some reflux, but it's nothing like it used to be. And it's certainly not enough to bother me. And it's a rare episode that I'll have to take a Tums, anymore. But it's a very, very common problem with people. And actually, the statistics are 1 in 4 people suffer from gastroesophageal reflux, either in the form of heartburn or, a reflux of stomach acid into the throat. And actually, if you look at the literature, people that eat more fat have increased risk of the gastroesophageal reflux. And fibers also seems to be protective. So the more fiber you eat, the less reflux you have. And the more fat you eat, the more reflux you have. And if you look at some of the studies they have done, if you give someone fatty food, it actually relaxes the sphincter at the end of the esophagus and lets the acid creep back up into the throat. So the more fat, if they give somebody a high fatty meal, they'll have more acid production than if they give them a low fatty meal. And, Barrett's esophagitis is really strongly associated with a high fat diet, and then it increases your cancer risk. There's also a decrease in the risk of the esophageal and stomach cancer by eating foods that are rich in beta carotens and antioxidants. Red fruits, oranges, apples, citrus fruit have been shown to decrease the incidence of esophageal and stomach cancer. On the other hand, egg yolks increase the release of cholecystokinin, which is a hormone that causes a relaxation of the esophageal sphincter. And meat as well. So that's another reason to kind of stay away from those to decrease your risk of reflux and needing these proton pump inhibitors. Nobody ever talks about getting rid of heartburn. It's if you see it on TV and you see the advertisements of proton pump inhibitors, now it drives me insane, especially when I see the cable guy and he's eating hot dogs and really stuffing himself and he's obese and he just, basically says you just have to, take the purple pill and you'll be okay. And that couldn't be further from the truth, because the purple pill has been associated with increased risk of pneumonia, increased risk of being more susceptible to food poisoning, increased risk of bone fractures and osteoporosis, not to mention the cost and long-term other side effects. So, again, changing your diet is a much better solution than taking proton pump inhibitors for the rest of your life. If you're on these blood thinners like Plavix or even Coumadin, they can be very hard on your stomach lining, and especially Plavix and some of the other blood thinners. And people are often placed on proton pump inhibitors, which have actually shown to interfere with the ability of these things to work. So now people are placed on more acid suppressant type medications. And that makes it a very difficult situation. But certainly if you decrease the fat in your meal, you'll decrease this reflux and decrease your risk of getting an inflamed esophagus and decrease your risk of bleeding. Because a lot of these blood thinners, you only bleed if there's some abnormality. So we've actually diagnosed cancers early in the bladder and in the colon because people bled because they were on blood thinners. So if you decrease your risk of bleeding, obviously you can tolerate these blood thinners better if you if you need them in the case of you've already had a stent placed. Taking all that aside and looking back into my own profession, the worst thing that I saw this week was in the doctor's lounge, a cancer surgeon. He is overweight, and he was eating a bacon and sausage sandwich between his surgeries. I really wanted to kind of get a picture because it was almost as bad as, the doctor smoking. There's no doubt about it that cured meats and processed meats and meat in general increases the risk of cancer. And here's this guy that probably just came out of the OR. He does specifically colon surgery and pancreatic cancer surgery. And here this guy is putting himself at risk for the very cancer that he resects. And, these surgeries can be quite violent. Parts of colon, all of colons can be removed. Pancreatic, surgery for that, and even the outcome is not very good. So it boggled my mind to see this guy subjecting himself to the potential risk of cancer. That being said, next week I hope to have an interview with a physician who is trying to change physicians by educating them into becoming whole food plant-based. Because again, I think that there is a need to change physicians' perception on whole food plant-based nutrition. Yeah, the practice of medicine is very frustrating. There are good things that are done, but there's a lot of bad things that, a lot of things we do that don't have good outcomes. And if you're unfortunate enough to have to go to the hospital, it's really hard to get good nutrition, and the risk of infections and side effects from different medications are really quite present. And even in elderly people, one of the biggest risks of dying is falling and breaking your hip because it's so debilitating when you have to go to the hospital and you get poor nutrition and you're in bed, and the risk of pneumonia and the ability to rehab because they're not getting the proper nutrients most likely, and they just become very frail, and that's what ends up getting them. The idea is to prevent all this, and I think if we educate physicians enough that at least we're starting to, we can get some better nutrition in hospitals, it would be wonderful. Had the direct experience over the last couple of weeks. My nurse's husband had to have surgery, and he was in the hospital, and he said he was plant-based, and they still brought him milk. His first day after abdominal surgery, he was given broccoli and cream soup. I'm not sure how that was supposed to be plant-based. I'm not so sure how that anybody thought that would be tolerable for somebody that just had GI surgery. So, she brought his meals in for him. He obviously didn't eat the broccoli and cream soup. But, it just boggles your mind that we as physicians can't get a handle on that what we eat is really causing disease, and what we eat can help us if given the opportunity. So there's a lot of learning to be done, and hopefully next week when we talk, maybe we'll get some sort of game plan that we can do. I am going to have my second annual nutrition conference next winter here, and we'll have a physician down to speak, and I hope that maybe we can gather some more physicians to the meeting. When I look in the doctor's lounge, there's a lot of unhealthy doctors, and a lot of doctors are on medication. So it's not like they do unto others that aren't done to themselves. They're still at the mercy of their own diets and nutrition goofs, I guess, so to speak. So There's a lot of learning to be done. If you want to follow some of the things that I eat, I post pictures often on Instagram. Jamela Delaney, it's JAIMELADULANEY. Again, you can email me at jamiedelaney@gmail.com. I've been getting a lot of nice emails and questions, and I appreciate those. Again, anybody that has any plant-based journey and have had any great outcomes they'd like to share with me, I'd love to hear from it. If you're struggling, I'd also like to hear from it. Maybe I can lend a little bit of a hand. I can't give out specific medical advice without having seen you as a physician. So as far as specific medical guidelines, I can't take you off your medicine if I haven't seen you. But certainly I can encourage you to get your diet such that you won't need medication and your own doctor can take you off of medications. If you're in Florida and want to come see me or want to come see me from any place, I'd love to see you. We can probably do a consult as well on the phone if need be. So please feel free to contact me. My website is drdelaney.com. It's drdelaney.com. I'd love a 5-star rating on iTunes. That makes the podcast get more traction on their site. So that would be great. The more people that sees this, the better. And if you have any ideas for people to interview, I'd be glad to entertain those as well. I wish everybody a happy 4th of July. I encourage you all to eat plant-based. If you're going to a picnic, bring a dish or two or three with you. Nothing like a giant watermelon stuffed with fruit. I've seen some really interesting ones posted on Instagram that you can watermelons with like little bananas sticking up look like dolphins. So be creative and take something fun with you to your cookouts and enjoy. Happy 4th of July. See you next week.